Okay, so I'll be talking about flash page reuse with WOM codes today. First of all, I want to thank my co-authors Gala Yadgar, Eitan Jacobi, and Asaf Schuster from Technion, Yuli from Caltech, and my advisor Andre Brinkmann from the University of Mainz, Germany. So, flash page reuse and WOM codes are quite a popular topic. So these are some of the publications from the last years. And the blue ones are those where either me or my co-authors were involved. So we have a little bit of experience in presenting this topic. And usually, whenever we give a presentation, it ends with a forest of hands of people asking questions like, yeah, but what about program interference and page order and number of programs? And are you sure you can really do that with MLC? So what we did was take a piece of hardware and implement a prototype, and finally we are able to say, yes, you can. However, the devil is in the details, and we learned five lessons across our journey, and that's what I want to talk today. But first, let me start with a little bit of background. So that you see on the right is the typical organization of flash chips, where you have pages organized into blocks, and pages start out as containing all ones, and then you can program a page clearing the bits that you want to clear, and the bits can be reset only by an erase operation that will reset all the bits inside the entire block. So it was noted that you can actually save one erase operation if you are able to reprogram a page, provided that you never try to reset bits with the reprogram operation, because reprogram operations cannot do that. Now, it turns out that WOM codes ensures exactly that. And this is an example, the first WOM code that was presented in 1982. And the way they work is basically they add some, they encode your plain bits, adding some redundancy, and they organize the encodings into different generations, which are reprogram compatible. So for example, let's say you have a 0-1 and you want to write a 1-0. So normally you would have to erase and then reprogram. But what you can do with WOM codes is encode using the first generation and write the encoded data, and then directly reprogram using the second generation encoding, and that will be reprogram compatible by construction. Now, what is the problem with MLC? So a big challenge with MLC is that in MLC, one physical cell represents two bits. So this is the typical threshold voltage distributions that we have in MLC. And you see that there are four states, and program operations can increase the threshold voltage while erase operations can reset it. Now, because of this, if you reprogram one bit, you will be touching the threshold voltage, possibly modifying the value of the other bit, so you can cause program disturbance. That means the WOM codes are not enough in this case. And to make things even worse, the two bits are mapped to two independent pages called the low page and the high page. And this is one typical pattern of low and high pages inside the flash block. And that means that now program disturbance can go across pages. So to understand how we can reprogram pages in MLC, we took the Siglead NAND tester, and we tested a bunch of chips from multiple manufacturers and with multiple feature sizes. And what we found is that pretty consistently, this is the voltage distribution for the normal, regular, low, high programming scheme. So that's what happens in your flash chips when you use them normally. And we tried to reprogram this thing in many, many different ways. And we found that most of those ways fail. And in the papers, you can find a lot of details about how you can fail. But here, I want to discuss the only reprogramming scheme that we found that was working. And that is the low, low, high reprogramming scheme, LLH for short. And with this scheme, we program the low bit once, then we reprogram it, and then finally we program the high bit. Now notice that we still need WOM codes, because when we reprogram the low bit, we cannot reset the any bit that was previously cleared, because we cannot go from the temporary state back to the array state, because it has a lower voltage, and you can do that only with erase operations. Now, from a block perspective, this is the normal life cycle that you have with low-high programming. And when you do low-low-high reprogramming, you start from the clean block, you program all the low pages in order, and you have a what we call the partially used block. And then you still get a second run where you reprogram the low page. So the blue pages are those that are actually reprogrammed. And then you also program the high pages, again, in programming order. And then you can erase it and you start again. Now, when you program the two low pages, you have to use WOM codes. So the first lesson that we learned is that you actually can reprogram MLC, but only on half of the pages. Now, since we program more per cycle, we were interested to see how the wear out looks like. So what we did was, again, we measured the bit error rate on a bunch of chips. Now here I'm presenting the results for one 16 nanometers chip, but on the paper you can find the results for all the others. So this is the bit error rate across the entire lifetime of the chip, and the black dotted line is the baseline, so the bit error rate that we have when you do the normal low-high programming. And the three colored lines are the bit error rate that you have when you program the low page for the first time, for the second time, and then the high page. Now, if we assume that our ECC hardware can correct 10 to the minus 3 bits, that would mean that our chip would be unusable after a little more than half of its lifetime. So what we tried to do was use the LLH reprogramming only for a portion of the lifetime. So what you see here are results for 20, 40, and 60% of the lifetime. And what you see is that immediately after you stop using the low-low-high reprogramming scheme, the bit error rate plummets down to the baseline. So that means that there are actually optimizations for the low-high scheme that somehow decrease the bit error rate or increase the bit error rate when you do LLH. Now, if you magnify the end of the lifetime when you do low-low-high reprogramming, you still have that the bit error rate is a bit higher. So we try to estimate a little bit the long-term wear by computing the relative reduction of PE cycles needed to reach a bit error rate of 10 to the minus 3. And again, these are different chips that we tested, and we found that the reduction goes between 1 and 8%, roughly. So the second lesson that we learned is that LLH reprogramming can be applied to a portion of the lifetime with a minor long-term wear. Now, how did we fit this stuff into an FTL architecture? So we took the Jasmine OpenSSD board and we implemented a prototype. So on the bottom you see the diagram of the Jasmine board, and all we did was modify the FTL, so we didn't touch the flash chips, we didn't touch the host interface, nothing like that. So this is the block lifetime that I described earlier, and we decided to use the LH programming for cold data and the LLH programming only for hot data. Now, this decision was made by previous work before, and we did it mainly because first we wanted to invalidate the low pages fast so that we can reuse them, and second, we want to minimize the lifetime of the WOM encoded data because it has some space overhead. So, for example, if you take this code that I described earlier, it has 50% space overhead. So to deal with it, we use two tools, the Polar WOM codes and the DRAM merge buffers. So the Polar WOM codes were introduced 3 years ago and were already proposed in the reusable SSD design presented at this venue last year. Now they have complexity similar to that of LDPC codes they were derived from, so they could be accelerated in hardware. And the important property of these codes is that the first write comes with no overhead whatsoever, while the second write comes with 100% overhead. So in our FTL, we use merge buffers to gather enough data to fit a flash page. And that's what we do on our first writes or on our cold data writes. On our second writes, we actually fill only half of the merge buffer. Then we read the content of the previous low page, of the invalid low page, and our encoder will give us a page-sized chunk of data that can be directly reprogrammed on top of the previous low page. Now, putting it all together, this is the baseline FTL that we started from. So we have the active block used with low-high programming, bunch of used blocks, and the garbage collection that cleans them and brings back them back to the clean state. And now we added another data path for hot data. In this one, the active block can perform either first writes or second writes. Now we had to add one queue for the partially used blocks that are there waiting to be reused. And actually the big challenge with this FTL is exactly that queue, because the accumulation of those blocks shrinks down those two pools, meaning that the garbage collection will pick blocks that in average have more valid pages. Now, I have a little demo here to help you visualize how this whole thing works. Now, this demo was realized with the SSD player, and that's the replay of an open SSD run of a trace taken from the Microsoft Cambridge repository. So what you see here are 64 pages blocks. Now, what you're looking at now is the warm-up, where we've write the entire address space one time as call data. So the green pages are those written for the first time. Now you should see the actual workload starting. So when you see a black cross, means that the data was updated, so the crossed page is invalid. And you can see the partially used blocks accumulating. And when we get enough invalid pages in them, we reuse them. And the blue pages are those that are written for the second time. Now, if you can see on the bottom left, there's a little gadget that shows the writes per erase. And that one will stabilize at 72 logical writes per erasure, even though we have only 64 pages per block. So now we can move on the evaluation. Now, first, we evaluated the number of erasures and the lifetime. So in the best case, so without considering write amplification and garbage collection, the number of erasures that you typically have in an SSD is the number of writes divided by the pages per block. Now, in the paper presented last year, they found that they could increase the pages per block by half, and that's because they assumed that they could reuse all the pages with 100% warm overhead, and that would yield a 33% reduction in erases. Now, what we found this year is that you can actually increase the pages per block only by a quarter, because you are actually reusing only the low pages, still with 100% overhead. So now, here is a chart of the erase reduction that we had on our runs on the OpenSSD prototype. So we run a bunch of traces from Microsoft Cambridge repository, from Florida International, and some synthetic ZipF traces. Now we have two prototypes, one with 7% over provisioning that represent consumer SSD, and another one with 28% over provisioning representing an enterprise SSD. The green line is the best case, computed with the formula I presented in the last slide. And you can see that the 28% over provisioning prototype is actually pretty close to the best case. Now, when we try to translate the reduction in erases into lifetime, we also have to take into account the partial application. So in this example, we are assuming 40% of the lifetime T. And so for 40% of the lifetime, we can actually write a quarter more pages per block. And in the remaining, we will write only the number of pages per block. And that will yield 10% more writes over the entire lifetime. But we also have to consider the long-term cell wear. Now, this is the case for 40% LLH reprogramming application, and we have seen that the lifetime reduction is about 5 to 6%, meaning that our 10% increase will plummet down to 5%. So this is the third lesson. LLH reprogramming reduces erases, but this does not necessarily, unfortunately, translate to a substantial lifetime increase. Finally, we evaluated energy and latency. because it is true that we have less erasures, so we save both energy and latency on those. But on the other hand, our write and read and write on WOM encoded data will consume a little bit more. In fact, writes will require a prior read of the invalid content, and also we have to consider the WOM overhead for the second writes. And the reads, they will also need to read twice as much because on the data that was encoded with the WOM encode. So this is the evaluation, the measurements that we got on the energy and latency on the same traces as before. And we can see that with the energy, we pay a little penalty, while with latency, we almost break even, and sometimes we are even able to gain something, because with latency, it's easier to hide the additional operations with parallel operations or prefetching on the off the low page. So the last two lessons that we learn is that the extra energy consumed by the read and write operations is larger than what we saved in erase operations. And the last lesson is that the extra time consumed by read and write operation does not increase latency. On the contrary, sometimes it is even possible to reduce the latency. So I want to conclude with recapping the lessons that we learned. So first, it is possible to reprogram MLC. There is a modest long-term wear. We reduce the erasures, and we see a limited lifetime increase. The energy consumption increases a little bit, and there's a limited effect on latency. So now a few words about the future. So we think that the manufacturer support would be very helpful in this field because of these optimizations that we have seen that increase our bit error rate. Then we have seen that in some application-specific contexts, it is possible to reprogram Flash even without WOM codes, so avoiding the overhead. And if you are more interested in this, please come talk to us at the poster session. And finally, we think that it's possible to optimize or even invent new WOM codes specifically tailored for MLC, so that it's possible to reprogram maybe both the low and the high page. That would be very good. And finally, there will be new technologies around the corner. We all know that, like TLC, one-shot programming, and whatnot. So these techniques will have to be reevaluated for those. So I want to thank you for your attention, and I can now take some questions.
Brent Welch at Google. So for your energy, so first off, I think it's cool work. It's neat. You did a great job explaining WORM codes to me. I finally understand them. But for the energy where you have to read, modify, write the page, in your case, you're reading it all the way out to the host, doing the update, and then writing it all the way back.
You mean when we read the low page?
Yeah.
No,
right.
Why we have to go to the host? This is done inside the FTL.
Oh, inside the FTL.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Well,
so but we there's only still a transfer across the little serial bus to the controller,
and to the main RAM. Yeah.
Right. Do you think it would be possible if the NAND supported that operation, that you just sort of read into the transfer register right in the die, and then did your encoding and
having some kind of integration in that sense?
Yeah.
Would be very, very cool.
But do you have any insight as to how much energy that would save?
No. Okay. But I think the transfer is a big chunk of the energy, actually consumes some energy, the transfer from the register out to the DRAM. So for sure you would save that. I don't know the ratio of that, but there would be additional savings. But we need the help from the manufacturers to do that.
Peter Desnoyers, Northeastern. So first, congratulations on this, because before, you know, everyone was saying, oh, you save all these erases, and other people were saying, well, you raise the average programming level, so no one actually knew whether you could do more, whether you could even break even. But I guess the question I had was, do you have a feel, have you started to look for, you know, if the programming was done in such a way that you actually could take advantage of all four levels instead of just the LLH programming, would that give you a small or big boost?
So I don't have an answer for that now, but it's very, very easy to compute that, because actually I have an emulator that emulates the entire board. So it's just, I can do that in the emulator and get you all those data. That's certainly something that we could consider. And actually, as I was saying, it might be possible that some other kind of WOM code will allow you to write to reprogram both pages. So if you check in the paper, that there are why all the other reprogramming schemes fail, and in there you can basically see why they fail. And yeah, sometimes it's possible. Maybe just invert, if I remember correctly, inverting the 1-0 constraint, it is possible probably to reprogram both pages.
Okay, thank you.